Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Royal Blue Podcast. It is the Post Newcastle show. I'm your host, Ian Kroll, and I've got two guests with me this evening or this afternoon. We've got Everton's, the Echo's Everton FC reporter, Chris Beasley, who's just fresh back from his trip to Newcastle. Yeah. Chris, how are things? How was your trip back?
Yeah, trip back was a lot better than the trip on the way. We had the delights of the great British railway system yesterday. Train stopping in Batley, he wasn't supposed to, for a good hour or so, and then moving on to Leeds, where we're all taking off the train and shunted onto another one. It ended up taking about 5 hours from Lime Street. So Thankfully got there, it's still decent time before kickoff, but yeah, bit of a delayed journey, but was fine coming back today. And yeah, obviously, yeah, fresh to join you both here.
Also on the pod, we've got regular contributor Gav Bucklands. Gav, how are things?
Well, it wasn't a 5 hour train journey yesterday, not too bad. I'm just basking in the glory of a point. Don't want a better phrase.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And for those who've got an eagle eye in the background of our new studio setup, You may well notice Gav Bucklands. Boys from the Blue Stuff.
Yes, written a couple of years ago. Follow-up may happen. And it's all about Everton's rise to 80s glory, as it says on the front cover, covering the club's history from 73 to 85, a follow-up to Money Can't Buy Us Love, which covered the club from 61 to 73. So, you know, there may be a follow-up. You never know.
Okay, so it is the Newcastle Post show. Everton drew 1-1 with Newcastle. Chris, we'll probably start with you because you were there.
Yeah.
Poor performance really in the first half, but we managed to get a point, unlikely point. So what are your initial thoughts?
Yeah, I think given the circumstances, you have to be happy with that. On the one hand, of course, it extends Everton's winless run in the Premier League, which is now, you know, an outright record in 13 matches. But I think you have to sort of take this game in isolation. It was a very good point in isolation, certainly in the circumstances facing a very good Newcastle United side. I know they've got quite a few injuries at the moment, which they had when they came to Goodison Park back in December. But still, you know, as Sean Dyche would say, a top outfit. And obviously, expensively assembled squad there in the Champions League this season. We saw what they did to West Ham United at the weekend, you know, 3-1 down and then came back 4-3. I just wonder whether, because of that, maybe that's why they maybe ran out of legs a bit last night. But yeah, it was a game, you know, as I think we were discussing before we went on air, first hour, very poor, very concerning again for Everton. Weren't at the races. It was a bad goal to concede. We'll go on to that. And didn't really look like getting into it. But for once, Sean Dyche took decisive action. A triple substitution. It's not often he does that when the game's so close. But yeah, the second one disallowed, rightly so, offside Newcastle. And then obviously it was a real pressure penalty for Dominic Calvert-Lewin, who come on at the end there and converted it for what could be a very precious point. And I think it could actually be more in terms of, like you said, yes, the winless run continues, but you've got to hope that it's some sort of watershed for Everton here, going into obviously a crucial period for the club, and obviously that massive game with Burnley, which was always going to be a must win anyway.
I'm surprised way that we managed to pull it back.
If you said the 60 minutes, I would have said very surprised, but from then on, I thought we got back into the game, didn't we? And we looked as though we could get something. I mean, there was a few skirmishes, wasn't there? Garner at the inside of the post, didn't he? And they were tired, and the crowd, I think, got a little bit weary. And I wouldn't say Newcastle were hanging on, but we played with a conviction that we didn't do at Bournemouth and didn't do for the first 60 minutes. And you felt that, you know, we could get something out of the game, and we did, albeit from a rather unexpected source, really, which I'm sure we'll talk about. A VAR penalty, well, I know the referee who ultimately awarded it is a rare thing for Everton, isn't it?
It certainly is. Right, I don't know if we're having technical difficulties. People are saying my mic is low, so just bear with us for a second while I listen back to my ear. This is what happens when you go live. Just bear with us. Right, we're back. We're back. This is what happens.
Back in the room.
This is what happens when you go live. It must have been at a disconnection of a mic. But we're all good. We're all good. Chris, did Dyche, you know, he seems to be set on Ben Godfrey at this moment in time, whether that's, you know, kind of a square peg in a round hole. He's not really playing in his correct position as a centre back. He seems to be happy to, you know, chop and change him to the left side of the defence or right side of the defence, whichever place we're really struggling for numbers. But we're not really struggling for numbers because we've got fullbacks on the bench. So did he get his team selection right for you to start off with?
Well, it wasn't the team I'd picked when we do our team selector. I had put Idrissa Gueye back in there in my team, but I would have started with Calvert-Lewin again, despite Beto scoring. Obviously, he changed that one. Surprising, because we all expected Vitaly Mykolenko to come back in at left back. Dyche himself had said at the Vitality Stadium there on Saturday evening, he'd hinted at that anyway, that he'd overcome the illness, which had kept out of that one. So we expected Mykolenko to come back in at left back. But I mean, you'd imagine, despite the own goal, that it'd be Seamus would be retaining his place at right back. But I just wonder whether... not so much. I mean, it might be that Dyche thinks that Godfrey's done well in these different positions now and he wants to keep the run going for him. But I just wonder, after Coleman playing 3 games in 10 days, maybe that was some sort of bearing. You know, he is 35 years of age now. I wonder whether that just is a decision to go with Godfrey again. Thought, Godfrey did all right, actually. And, you know, he was up against, you know, some difficult players last night, made some crucial interceptions at times. I mean, personally, I don't know why you've got a centre-back playing so often in that position. And he was hardly used at all, was he, the first half of the season? I think he only just came in for that away game at Burnley, albeit did well in a back three that day. He was hardly used at all until, when they went to Fulham at the end of January, and he's had that run in the side now. He said some decent performances and some ways really struggled, but I thought he did well last night in terms of getting it right. We've probably all got our own opinions. There's a couple of different positions he could have changed it, but it was probably key. And when we go on to this as well, Gav and I were discussing, we thought Ashley Young did well, to be fair, and after he came in for Jack for Jack Harrison. So yeah, that was an interesting one, which the manager probably feel vindicated by.
Sorry, Young plays wide right in the home game, didn't he? Against Newcastle,
but he actually had a good game then.
Yeah.
I remember.
Yeah, I did.
Harrison played as the 10.
So maybe he was influenced by that. I don't think
Young had a bad game yesterday. I don't think he was great. There's been times where he's played right back and he's been really poor, giving away free kicks. You know, he was guaranteed a yellow card early stages of the season when he was right back.
You know, at the end of the day, he's 38 and he's bought on a 39, whatever it is these days. You've got on a free. And you know, if you get a decent performance, that's a bonus, isn't it? He's probably played a lot more games than what he was expected, possibly. And I think he was bought his left back cover, wasn't he, really, as much as anything else. And I thought he was fine last night in the context of our performance and where we are as a team. You know, you wouldn't say, like, if we were mid-table, yeah, you'd want Young game, but where we are and the level of his performances he's putting in, I would say I thought he was fine last night. And he obviously, as you touched on about the penalty, but I'm just wondering whether Dyche was influenced by the fact that he's seen some of the Newcastle where he thinks he can play Young wide right and then just take from there.
I mean, the attacking, you know, from an attacking sense, like the width and everything else that goes along with that, it was just non-existent, isn't it?
It's non-existent. It was non-existent at Bournemouth as well, wasn't it?
That's part of the problem, yeah, to be fair. Like you said, that Young did well. You've been using that role away against Manchester City as well, so maybe he sees that for, you know, the certainly the big sides away from home, it's a role he can play. But yeah, I thought Jack Harrison really struggled at Bournemouth, and obviously he was bundled off the ball for a goal, and wasn't offering much. So you think, you say, yeah, have Jack Harrison in there to provide you with the crosses, because he can do that, but unfortunately he's not been doing that in recent times. So yeah, Ashley Young had a decent shot on target towards the end when they were pushing for the equaliser, and like we say, ultimately won the penalty when he was wrestled to the ground. So I think all things being equal, it's probably a very encouraging outing for him.
I mean, whatever way you want to test, look, Gav, you know, it was a positive result. I'm not like, let's try and be positive about it, because it was surprising more than anything.
Yeah.
And we'll come on to the penalty, because, you know, my heart was in my mouth when the Newcastle keeper got an answer to it, but it's still 3 months without a league win. Now we're in the fourth month.
Yeah.
It's not great, is it?
Well, yeah, more than 3 months without a league win, isn't it? It's getting on to, you know, yeah, 3.5 months, yeah, isn't it? Yeah. So 3.5 months and 6 points deduction, and we're still not in the bottom three. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I suppose it's typical the way things are going, that we've celebrated breaking an unwanted club record with you know, some joy over getting a point, isn't it, really?
Yeah,
I agree. I mean, for 60 minutes, it wasn't great, was it? I mean, let's face it, it was a continuation of the performance at Bournemouth. You know, maybe argue it was even worse. So I know we might want to talk about their goals separately, but there wasn't a lot there, as you say, lack of creativity. We had one opportunity, I think, in the first half, was that Decore, I think, had shot over, didn't it? But apart from that, there was nothing. And, you know, you've only got to follow social media during an Everton game to get a general understanding over what the fan base feels, and quite rightly, there was a lot of people who were very angry during that time, particularly before the break. I think after the break, we'd come out a little bit better. But yeah, it wasn't great. And but for a penalty, what would we be saying about that last night?
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Why is it that with sparkling water, I'm always playing guessing games with what flavor I'm drinking? Is it citrus? Is it aluminum can flavored? Not sure. Sparkling ice, though, they really mean flavor. Like in-your-face flavor. Orange mango, black raspberry. Don't even get me started on the strawberry lemonade. Kiwi strawberry slid right into my taste buds' DMs last night and let them know who's boss. No subtleties there, and no sugar either. But it does have vitamins and antioxidants. Find sparkling ice at a major grocery store or club retailer near you. Sparkling ice. Anything but subtle.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
You know,
well, I'll tell you what I'd be saying, because I said it at half time, and I don't think I look stupid, but I do think that it did look like the players weren't playing for the manager in that first half, because it looked like we were kind of rolling over a little bit. And, you know, it all comes down to quality and everything else that comes with it. Did you get that from, you know, your vantage points at St James's Park, or am I going over the top?
Not that they weren't playing for him, they weren't. Very good at all, I thought. Unfortunately, I mean, two of the most consistent players this season, Branthwaite and Tarkowski, neither of them really sort of covered themselves in glory for the goal. I don't know, Tarkowski was like, the captain there, the most experienced member of that back four, he should be setting that line, and he was behind everyone else, and then the ball goes over his head. Branthwaite can't get to Isaac, and then Tarkowski can't make the challenge either. So, to be fair, they both are moved on from that in the second half. But yeah, I wouldn't say they weren't playing for him. It was just a lack of quality. You'd sort of Beto and his chaos factor up front. I said the only shots on target he got were both on Byrne, really, and he caught him with his head and then slide into him later on. But no, I didn't get the vibe they weren't playing for the manager. It was just very poor. It was just a lack of quality, and you know, that did change. Like I said, the game opened up after those changes, and maybe Newcastle ran out of legs, so it was very different the last 30 minutes. So yeah, it wasn't for me a case that they weren't playing for the manager. It was just a lack of quality for me. But you were looking at it, certainly going forward, you're thinking, what's the ambition here? What are they actually trying to do? Because there was hardly anything in terms of a coherent plan of how you thought they were trying to go about scoring. They just very short on the ideas front for me.
Yeah.
Based on, you know, this barren spell that we're in then, Gav, you know, the more than nearly 4 months now, and the memes on social media. Does Dyche have until the end of the season, no matter what, for you?
Oh, yeah. Whether he goes to the end of the season is a moot point. I'm not sure what purpose bringing somebody else in would do now. I'm not sure whether history would show whether that actually works, to be honest with you. Yeah. I mean, look at, was it Leeds a couple of years ago? We did it twice, was it?
Well, last season, yeah.
Burnley did it when Dyche himself went in, with 8 or 9 games left. I'm not sure whether facts show. It shows that it actually works. Changing the manager 7 or 8 games left, and there's lots of other reasons for that, isn't there? You know, who actually makes the decision? You know, well, that's compensation, all that type of thing. You know, there's a whole host of non-footballing reasons why it wouldn't happen, I think you have to just pray that it gets through to the end of the season. And within all of this, you know, we are 6 points below where we should be. Yep. I mean, we wouldn't be talking about Dyche's future then, would we, really? Because we'd be on, what, 33 points? Would we be above Palace?
Even with the run that we're on?
Yeah. You know, we would not be anywhere near relegation. So I think we need to take that into account. But as it stands, I think I understand the concerns of fans, because I think we said I know you guys weren't here on Monday, that the problem is it's 12 or 13 games where actually the first 7 or 8, we were a bit unlucky and actually did okay. But since then, the performances have begun to deteriorate, and you know, the trajectory of our performances and our results are going down, aren't they? Only but for the grace of God and the poor form of all the teams elsewhere that we're holding our heads above water at the moment. And, you know, we've just got to hope that we can track a couple of results out between now and the end of the season, starting off on Saturday. But I wouldn't be changing manager between now and the end of the campaign for lots of footballing and off-the-pitch reasons.
Yeah, well, that's one of the reasons why I asked the question, and I'll ask Chris as well. But we don't know what's going on off the pitch. A lot, probably people inside the club don't know what's going on as well. So it would be very difficult to sack Dyche regardless of the form that we're in.
Well, I said on Monday, I said if the club was having like a day weekly meeting now, where would Dyche and his position be on the agenda? It'll probably be fourth or fifth on the agenda, wouldn't it, really? After the ownership issue, after the, you know, sorting out the commission and the findings of the commission, after the building of Bramley Moor, Dyche should probably be the fourth item on the agenda. So he's well down the list in terms of the big decisions the club have got to make, or the, you know, their bandwidth as people, and within that, who are the club as well. So yeah, I think he'll remain a job for those reasons more than anything else. When it comes to the summer, with possible new owners, you know what new owners want to do when they come in, it may be a more tricky position for them.
Do you go along with that, Chris?
Yeah, that's a sort of concur with what Gav says. I think the 8 managers in 8 years, I think if you're calling for Dyche's head now, you're part of the problem. You're part in those massive problems at Everton, you're part of the problem if you're calling for Dyche's head. But the two worst seasons in the club's entire history in terms of equivalent points scores, as Gav said, if it wasn't for the points deduction, don't get me wrong, an absolutely rotten run. You know, with no hiding from that. All managers are based on the results, and this is the worst for, you know, gone beyond 30 years now for Everton, you know, and I understand that about the downwards trajectory, but it doesn't have that end of days feel like of Lampard or Benitez. I take Gav's point totally. They were unfortunate in a lot of those games, and then they have sort of tailed off in the last few. But I can anybody honestly say that any manager could have done better in these circumstances over the season? Not on this run. It's a rotten run, of course. It's a record-breaking bad run. But over the season so far, is any manager going to have done better in those circumstances? What would Bielsa have done in these? I understand Sean Dyche is not everybody's cup of tea, and it's certainly not. I think I'm in a sort of privileged position, and I understand this in that Joe and I get to go to all the away games as well, and all those fans who spend their hard-earned cash travelling up and down the country to watch the Blues, and the away form's been much better this season on the whole again. But Goodison Park's the problem, because most of the fan base obviously only get to see them at Goodison. They've only won 3 times all season, so I understand how frustrating it is, and the football is attritional a lot of the time, you know, a lot of the creative players have gone out of the club. But you can't just keep going, oh, change the manager, change the manager. I mean, who would they bring in? I heard somebody even suggest last night, oh, I'd give it to Seamus Coleman for the rest of the season. I mean, it's desperate acting. I mean, maybe could have a reaction. Maybe it would work. But that's not the way to go forward for the club. The problems with the club, along with obviously the huge losses and all the chaos off the field, is this churn of managers, eight managers in 8 years. Just can't keep doing that.
And you take it. I'm just trying to think here. Say it happened this week. We'd manage to go into a club and think, actually, I could be 6 points worse off next week straight away.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to do it, are you? So that's another thing. And then if you do it, I'm being for 8 games, and then you get another manager then, don't you know, to come in. So lots of I think it's quite fair to say that Dyche needs to justify his position. Absolutely. Because 13 games that was a run in the league is a terrible run, isn't it? 5 points, 6 points in that time. But it's not as easy to say that therefore he should go, because there's lots of reasons why he should remain and will remain as Everton manager. Having said that, got beat on Saturday. Could be an incest in there.
Well,
could be more of an incessant conversation, mightn't it, really, against the baby. I know that we'll cover that later on in the week. So it can change. But as we're sitting down here at the moment, just got a point, is that there's no reason to, and the sensible thing would be to keep him. And let's see what happens.
Yeah, well, to be continued on the Burnley one, obviously, that is definitely a must-win. Without a doubt.
I think that's something everybody agrees on.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, well, now that my mic and my audio is working, I can read out some comments that are coming in just basically on the, you know, the conversation that we're having. So Paul Brownwick says, without a doubt, the worst football I've witnessed in 52 years of watching the Blues. Get to the end of the season and ring the changes. The ball must need medication for altitude sickness.
Yeah, I know, I get that. I mean, Dyche's game is, you know, everybody knows about it, so it can't be a surprise, really. Yeah. But I think it has deteriorated in terms of we spoke about the key players for me are McNeil and Harrison, aren't they? Because we don't offer creativity through the middle. And if they're not operating effectively, then I think we struggle. And before Christmas, I think we're on that good run. I think both are playing well. And we beat Cavalier, got a few goals, didn't he? But if they're not operating effectively and Decore's not scoring, I still don't think he looks fit, does he, Decore? Then we've got issues, haven't we?
I mean, he has been dreadful.
He has been woeful. So I think the good form of those players can disguise the sort of, you know, the Dyche style of play. But once the form and confidence goes, then Dyche's style of play is exposed a lot more, isn't it? Because you don't get the results. And I think that's what's happening at the moment. But I agree, but we knew what we were going to get with Dyche. I mean, that was one of the reasons we brought him, wasn't he? A bit of stability you know.
One thing I thought he'd do was make us hard to beat.
Well, just defensively.
We were for the time, weren't they? But, yeah,
no. Defensively, is we've been woeful, haven't we? I mean, that first goal last night, you know, they had the second one was this lad. The first goal, that was like, we conceded under Lampard, that, wasn't it? When you see where, you know, the two centre-halves were, 10 yards apart, something like that? Yeah. Godfrey got pulled across. That was a Lampard goal, wasn't it?
It was a bad goal, whoever it was, wasn't it?
Yeah. That you would expect best off Dyche.
Yeah.
And we, you know, let's face it, we nearly conceded an own goal last night, didn't we? So we conceded
that would have been peak Everton,
So we last four games, what a couple of penalties we've conceded, a soft goal at Bournemouth, Solanke's, an own goal, soft goal last night, nearly another own goal. And you know, you don't expect that from a Dyche team, and defensively we have been not as strong as what I feel we should be under Dyche. And bear in mind there that Brandwaite's come in and has played a lot better than what we expected. I think Mikhailenko's kicked on a little bit this year.
He's been
one of our most improved players. Pickford's been playing well in goal. But we've not been as strong as notwithstanding all that, we've not been as strong defensively as what we would expect. I mean, Tarkowski has comforted himself in glory in the last four or five games, has he, for a start?
although he played a crucial role in the equaliser last night in terms of he was the bouncer for Dominic Calvert-Lewin. What he did, I've done it in my moments missed today. It was almost like he was going to take the penalty. He never was, but he picked up the ball and he stood on the spot. So obviously they can't come in and scuff it. They're not going to put Dom off, to be fair, as one good captain thing he did.
Yeah,
there.
I did. Funny enough, he didn't see that on the TV cameras. They said on the cameras, oh, Tarkov. They was looking at what I think Young was talking to the referee or something like this, and on camera, and he said on the commentary, oh, Tarkovsky's putting the ball on the spot. I thought, is he a new penalty taker?
Is he going to put the laces through this one?
Yeah. Well, that'll bring nicely onto my next point, but just Chris, one comment here from Simon says, we play far too narrow at times, and ultimately, the transition from defence into attack is slow and extremely predictable.
Yeah, it's like kind of what Gab was just saying there about the creative outlets as well, isn't it? I mean, although he's always like, looks like he could do something, Dwight McNeil's kind of on the periphery of things again last night, and I see Young coming for Harrison. It is key. Like you said, you've got all these factors combining. Well, like just being some big Deitch apologist, but ultimately a lot of this is down to the players again, because okay, there's a system. You could say Deitch football is boring, it's predictable, it's long ball, whatever. But you know, if the players aren't playing to the potential, the draws were dried up for Decore until Dom took the penalty. They dried up for him, Harrison, McNeil, not creative out wide. You know, it's all good. You know, going back to using a dice phrase here, put it in the melting pot and
see where it goes. Yeah, in the mixer. Yeah, and that's right. The one thing we lack, which most clubs have, is pace.
A chronic lack of pace,
isn't it? You know, and it's quite obvious. I was watching Brentford against Man United on Saturday, and Brentford are only a couple of points ahead of us, are they? 3 points, something like that. And they've got pace. And if you've not got pace in the Premier League, then you're going to struggle, aren't you? And we've not only not got pace, we're slow in certain areas. And I think that's also hurting us. But that you can't give players pace.
You can't make them any quicker.
And that's a problem you've just got to live with. That's the only way you can change that is your recruitment. But the lack of pace is also hurting us, I think.
Okay, well, maybe the two biggest surprises, or the one biggest surprise, sorry, that trumps the actual draw that we got, would be the fact that we got two VAR decisions go in our favour.
Double.
Obviously, the offside. Yeah, both correct. Obviously, we'll come on to that, the offside and the penalty. You know, we go 2-0 down there, Chris. Yeah. The game is completely over, isn't it?
Yeah, you'd think so. When you the way it had gone, it looked pretty ominous again. Like, I mean, when you saw it first time, like, oh, that's too soft again. But ultimately, it was offside. But that's what you got to do. You got to hang in there. It was the correct decision, and that's why they're able to sort of when Newcastle's legs went towards the end to fight their way back in there with what was, you know, when you saw the replays of the penalty for me. I know maybe Gav a slightly different view on me, look pretty emphatic to me.
I mean, Gav, the penalty, I don't think anyone kind of knew that it was a penalty. I didn't. I was just you know, sat there, and the next minute, like, they're looking at it, and then as soon as you watch that replay, you go, God, that's nailed on as an actual penalty, isn't it?
That's a very, very good question, isn't it? Because it sort of goes against the grain about what's not been awarded or has been awarded in the past. The general feeling, I think, around holding in the areas, if the ball doesn't come near you, then, and the ball goes, you know, lands away from you, then you can pretty much do what you want in the penalty area and get away with it. We saw the classic example of Onana at Spurs, didn't we? Where he got the shirt pulled, which prevents it from getting to the ball. And the general consensus is that there'll only be penalties awarded if you stop somebody from trying to score. And like, you know, the Kulusevski one, you're comparing the Kulusevski ones to one at Brighton a couple of days later to the Spurs one against us. The Brighton one was given because it was Danny Welbeck was just about to put the ball in the net. That's why it was given. The one at Spurs wasn't given because Onana wasn't anywhere near the ball. And also as well, VAR does not tend to overrule a referee. They didn't overrule last night, they sent it to the screen, but doesn't tend to get involved with the on pitch on a shirt pull in those circumstances. But it did last night, didn't it?
Yeah.
Even though the ball didn't go anywhere near Young, they referred it to the referee. Now, when it went to VAR, I thought they're not going to overturn this because VAR never overturns such such incidents, but it's inevitable. Once it's sent to the referee, you know, go to the screen, think he's, even if it's Newcastle, they're going to give a hey, and assume it's from the end. But that's so frustrating, isn't it? You can't win with VAR. You don't get awarded anything. You say VAR's inconsistent. And then when you do get awarded something, you still say it's inconsistent, because if that's a penalty, the Shea, Paul and Anana is a penalty.
Well, they're both penalties.
They're
we
both penalties, aren't they? They are. If that's what it is. But if anything, what was the correct decision in the way, like, the guidance goes around such matters and the experiences, the one of Spurs was probably the correct decision, because he's going nowhere near the ball, and you only give penalties when somebody, you know, when you're stopping somebody getting to the ball. And a bit like, I'm going on here a bit now, but Calvert-Lewin at Leeds, remember a couple of years ago where he was just about to shoot,
yeah,
and he got pulled back and the referee didn't award it, but VAR awarded it because it was overturned the referee's decision. And that was the type of circumstance in which you award it. We don't normally award it in those circumstances last night.
Well, I'm glad you come on. I'm glad you kind of said that, because I'm going to throw conspiracy theory in here.
Right, okay.
Did we get that penalty because we didn't get the penalty against Bournemouth?
I don't think it works like that.
No.
No. No.
Okay, well, did we get the penalty because Ashley Young protested? Because no one else seemed to protest.
Maybe we need more of that then. Maybe Everton need to stand up for themselves more, and maybe it was a wily trick from a veteran player who's been at the top for years. I don't know if that was,
I mean,
my influences. Yeah, but you got to. I'm trying to think. There was another one that they didn't get. I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, there's been plenty.
The opposite was Decore at Forest, wasn't it? Which was a similar
thing. Too honest. Yeah,
he was with Decore. Was holding somebody, wasn't it, I think. But the obvious comparison here is Calvert-Lewin didn't do anything on Saturday, did he? Is that the thing?
Yeah, when the one.
Yeah.
No, he didn't, which he should have, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
But can you tell? You can tell Ashley Young's played for Man United, can't you?
Oh, all day long, mate. All day long.
I mean, in a way, was it a positive thing that it was Ashley Young who was fouled? Because maybe if he wasn't fouled, he would have thought, well, I'm not going to appeal.
If it had been Chimiti or somebody like that, a little bit more inexperienced and wet round ears and that type of stuff, possibly. And Young drew on his experience and the fact that he has been a winner and he's won lots of Premier League titles and stuff. And that shows in those moments, isn't it, sometimes? And that possibly did make a difference.
We need more 38-year-olds in the team, obviously.
Possibly. And I just thought, to be honest with you, if you're Newcastle, though, that done it, you'd be having a go at him, wouldn't you?
Kicking yourself.
But tell you what, mate, it could be a bit of a minor turning point. I mean, major turning point for us if it transpires that we go on a decent run now.
Let's hope it is. I mean, Chris, at the hour after the game, kind of argue. He's obviously going to argue for his own team, but he's suggested that they were both wrestling with each other and pulling each other. But the more you look at it, the more it is a clear foul on Ashley Young. I don't care what anyone says.
He just pulled it. Yeah, he just wrestled him to the ground. Yeah, in terms of wrestling, and you think, you know, the book, was it six of one, half a dozen of the other? Now it's naive from there, lad. He just pulls him down. But we say the penalty itself. What a pressure kick as well from Dom. You know, obviously that long goalless run for him. Bit unfortunate. Couple disallowed along the way. Like you said, you maybe heart in the mouth as the Brovka gets a hand on it. But yeah, got to hope it's a turning point for Dom as well as Everton.
What was the turning point in the game then, Gav? Because like we've already mentioned, you know, 60 minutes shocking performance, really, certainly in the first half. But then we did seem to get into the game. I mean, from my point of view, I don't know where the subs obviously clearly changed the game, but also I think the fact that when Newcastle scored that second and it was disallowed, the nerves maybe started to creep in and Everton started to be, you know, a bit more expansive in the play. And, you know, certainly when Gomez came on the pitch, we looked at a far better proposition in the middle of the park.
Yeah, I think it's all them factors, isn't it, really? Newcastle tired. I know they've had a difficult game and they've got a few injuries, but they're quite obviously tired. Then the crowd gets a little bit restless, as you say. Sometimes you have and I've seen this before, if you have a VAR goal disallowed, it can have an adverse effect on your car and psychologically. And then to be fair with Sean Dyche, he has got his substitutions, you know, someone said largely wrong this year or being ineffective. And you've seen three come off the bench and you're thinking, first sort of thing, this is a panicky measure, but actually in the context of the game they're all pretty much spot on. I thought Beto being poor, and I think when you're trying to push the game on a little bit more, I think Garner and Gomez are going to give you a little bit more creativity, aren't they, in the park. I thought Gomez was excellent. There is a case, by the way, about whether he should start Gomez, I think. I think if fit, and they changed it. I mean, we haven't spoken about Garner. You know, it's for always saying the fates of Newcastle, say the fates are working against them. When Garner hits the inside of the post, you think, oh, it's not one of them, mate.
Yeah.
And
I thought it was in.
I did on the telly. You think that's in that. And yeah. You're thinking, when it bounces out, you're thinking it could have gone anywhere. And I think that was it. Those three. And I think when Schmitty come on, we didn't do much. It's just they also the shape of the team, given just something to think about.
Well, it just gives the defence something
to think about. Yeah, absolutely. And you're thinking, as I said at the start of the pods, you're thinking we can get something here. If there's, we look more likely to score. We'd be just 50-50s we were going in for and winning them. And we were getting our, you know, blocks in and everything we weren't doing, certainly in the first half, we were doing in the last, you know, from 60 minutes onwards. And when you do that, it's amazing how the game can change. The momentum shift was there for all to see. And in the end, you could say that over 90 minutes, we probably didn't deserve a draw. You know, the stats will probably bear that out over the last 30 minutes for the recovery made, and the attack momentum that we had, we probably deserve to get something. And yeah, okay, the penalty was, some would say, so I'd be a bit lucky, but we've had a whole host of bad decisions go against us this year, and I think we were due one. And if you're going to get a bad decision in your favour or whatever, you know, it's 2 minutes from the end when you get beat 1-0 and you're staring down the ball, it's not the worst, is it really?
Still another 9 minutes. When that board went up, 9 minutes stopped.
Well, 9 minutes, bad. I was thinking, I bet you're there thinking at Newcastle, they thought, well, this is a bit, it could be difficult. And you're thinking, actually, this could be working our favour
here.
Yeah,
because they're leggy by
there. And you're thinking, actually, this 9 minutes, rather than working for them, could be working for us.
Yeah,
that context, a point is decent. Performance maybe not so, but you saw a few things at the end where you think you take that into the Burnley game, you can maybe have something to work with.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, definitely. And Chris, you know, over the course of Dice's managerial reign at Everton, he's kind of been criticised for his subs or lack thereof. Yeah. You know, like, as Gav has said, even when he has brought people like changes on, they just haven't made any impact. But, you know, last night he got it absolutely spot on. So, he's got to have a bit of credit for that.
Yeah, I don't know if, like you said, it's whether it was luck or judgment with like a desperate act, three at once, because he doesn't often do that. But yeah, it was spot on. That was the turning point in terms of like they started coming back into it. And with James Garner's obviously a different sort of proposition in the middle there, and Calvert-Lewin, like as Gav says, whereas Beto had sort of come on and done well at Bournemouth, it was very different with him starting. I don't know. Like I said, other than sort of being a nuisance, I don't know really what he was doing there. So yeah, I mean, yeah, credit's where it's due. Maybe you should do that a bit more often. Then, as I said, rather than me just being like this staunch Dice defender, perhaps that maybe you should be looking at the bench, you know, and it's maybe easier said than done, given that there's a lack of options at times there. But yeah, and even like bringing Seamus on at the end there, maybe what a wise move there, as you just got into 90 minutes. Godfrey, who I said had sort of done well in difficult circumstances, just bring Seamus on for his experience for stoppage time. And that's another one he did. And we mentioned Schmitty as well later on coming on and just giving him something to think about, an extra body up front. So yeah, all things being equal, I think in terms of, you know, it was one of his better nights in terms of substitutions.
Yeah, but within all that, Anana didn't look too happy, did he, when he got taken?
Oh. Well, you keep coming on to the points that I'm going to talk about.
Yeah,
I want to talk about kind of the balance of the midfield, and this kind of centres on Anana. So obviously I'll ask you both about it. But first of all, I agree. When he went off, there was a bit of a cold. You might not have seen it up in the stand. You've obviously seen it back, but there was a cold exchange or maybe something with Anana and Dice. They didn't look at each other. He just went off. First of all, what did you think of his performance? Was it good enough last night? Did he do enough?
Obviously not, because he got taken off after the 60 minutes. And I thought he was ineffective at Bournemouth as well, to be fair. After I didn't see the Belgium game against England, but I believe he played quite well. Yeah, I thought he was... didn't do enough, did he? Whatever that entails, I'm not so sure. But he was lackluster, and it just didn't affect the game at all, as he should be doing, as he's, we know he's got the ability to do. And I think he did fully deserve to be taken off, to be fair, and the end of. And I think if he's got any axe to grind with Dyche over the substitution, I think he is, you know, he's probably a bit misplaced in that belief, because I don't think he did enough last night, and that was reflected in our performance. And two players who come on who moved the ball far quicker, were more agile around the pitch, certainly in Garner's case, James Garner, that is. I thought he looked a different outfit, as Sean would say.
A comment on there, who's going to be happy coming off at 1-0 down?
Well, nobody, is there, really?
But he deserves to go off.
Absolutely.
I completely agree. The reason I really bring this up, because I do think he was a focal point in not really the best way. So I think probably if you look at his stats, Chris,
they
probably were solid.
Yeah.
You know, we probably had quite a... I need to double check them, but he had, you know, a high accuracy pass rate, and, you know, he might have won a couple of tackles, but he didn't really affect the game as a, you know, as an attacking midfielder.
Yeah.
I think my point is, what does he do? What are we asking him to do? Because if he's a defensive midfielder, then really we've got a defensive midfielder in Idrissa Gueye. We don't need Anana to be there. So this all just comes down to the balance and the fact that when he went off last night and we had Idrissa Gueye, we had Garner and Gomez, that was the best I've seen an Everton midfield play for a long, long time. And it was without Anana.
Yeah, well, I just said, what does he actually do? I actually thought he was better at Bournemouth, to be fair, especially in the first half. He was playing quite a few expansive passes. He faded like a lot of them did in the second half. But yeah, last night he wasn't in it nowhere near as much as he can. And I think that's the big frustration with all of us, because we know what a massive talent he is. We've seen about how he, you know, ran the show at Wembley against England. Obviously, he set up Tielemans for his goal. And you think, are you doing that on the international stage? I know it's lesser players at Everton. There's not as much talent in there. Or what, you blame it on Dyche's tactics, saying he bypasses the midfield. But still ample opportunity there for Anana to do his thing, as it were. Yeah, he's a bit different than Idrissa Gueye, isn't he? He's not just putting out fires. He's got, you know, he can pick a pass in a way that Idrissa Gueye can't do, and just his physicality as well. You know, he's a physical player, but, you know, he's a much smaller man than Anana, who's like colossal, really. Just combination of his intelligent passing and his huge physique. You think he should be bossing games? It just doesn't happen far too many times. Sort of matches seem to pass him by, and that was one of the occasions last night.
Yeah, picking up on your points on there, and I think Joe made the point on the pod the other week when I was talking about Anana, is part of his umbrage with Dyche is probably the position and the way Dyche wants him to play, which would be quite restrictive on him. Don't be expansive. I don't want to see you running with the ball and be getting out of position. I want you to, you know, stay in position at all times, which is possibly, you know, given his age and physique, is probably doesn't suit him. You know, suits Garner Gueye because of his characteristics, but probably doesn't suit Anana. And again, if that was one of his arguments with Dyche, is, well, I can do all of this, but you're actually just me telling me to just do a limited, you know, but limiting what I can do, because for what you see the team, I can see why you would be annoyed with that. And you could argue as a supporter that doesn't do us any favours in terms of our attack. You spoke about our attacking ability and his ability to get forward. And I think if there was a discussion with the two and he brought that up, I think that would be a fair point by Anana. Dyche would probably say, well, you give yourself to the team. That's what you want you to do. Don't moan about it. But I think there is scope for him to be a little bit more expansive without damaging the team. But I think that probably relies on Takore being fit and being able to play. You know, if Decore plays in front of two midfielders, if he comes back, that you've got three then, haven't you? And I can do a little bit more. But if Decore's not fit and is not moving around the pitch as well as what he should be doing, you can see why he wants Anana to sit in a little bit. And I think that also contributes to it, is that I think it's the role that he's being asked to play, and that's best for him. I think a better James Garner's probably a better fit with Anana, but I can see why, like last night, where you play Garner Gueye in those circumstances, especially if you've got Ashley Young playing wise, right? Yeah, I think, but it's probably 75% Onana, 25% Dyche. Then, if you're looking at looking at, you know, why he's not performing over the last couple of games.
I mean, just to clarify my point on when I say what does he do, I'm not slagging him off. I think he's got all the talent in the world. What I'm trying to say is, what is his role within that midfield? So if it's a defensive midfielder, then that's fine. But we all say that we think he can become this box to box midfielder. We think he's got the attributes. You've talked about his physicality and everything else that goes along with it. That he can do more, and he just doesn't do that.
Well, Garnaghy, he's not a defensive midfielder, is he? As such, he's a midfielder who'll sit deep, but he's not a number six. Never has been.
How is he not a defensive midfielder then?
He's not a six, where he'll sit in front of the defence and get the ball off the defence and pass it, you know, like play on the turn and pass it into midfield and keep things ticking over.
He's not one of them.
No, because he can't pass the ball. He's not. Okay. So compare him to say your player who played the number six and would do that was Fabian Delph. Mm-hmm. You had the wherewithal to pick the ball off the defence, play on the half turn, pass into midfield, you know, recycle possession, you know, be good on the ball and be good with your passing. But Garnaghy can't do that. He's not an accurate passer of the ball or a decent passer of the ball.
This is where we disagree, and this is where someone said Guy isn't a holding midfielder as well.
I'd say that I was not.
No, yeah, which yeah, is fine. Yeah. This is what I didn't yeah. hold it back. I put it out there. For me, Guy is that holding midfielder. He's a Makélélé where he puts out fires, he wins the ball back, and then he doesn't do anything with it. All he needs to do with it is just pass it to someone who's a bit more creative.
Yeah, Makélélé's far better player. Who could pass the ball like? But yeah,
that's an argument about who's his
positioning.
Quality.
Yeah, his positioning is when he's putting out fires.
You don't want
a number six to put out fires. You want your number eight really to put out fires around the pitch. What you want your number six to is basically, you know, a bit like Rodri, be like that would be a decent example. Is just to stand in front of your defence, pick the ball off your defence, and, you know, move the ball into midfield. Don't do anything stupid and sense danger. And keeping position and Garnaghy, you know, his position is not great when the opposition have got the ball. What he has been good at with Evan, and still good at to a degree, is, as you say, putting out fires, is moving out left and climbing into somebody and moving out right. But that's not a number six role. That's, I'd say, more of a number eight. But that's not to say, after all that, You can't give him that role. But I'm just saying it's not a natural role for him, and that's possibly what you're saying is you got Garnaghy and Onana, you're both playing roles that are not natural to them. And maybe that's one of the issues.
Step in here as mediator. I was going to say but part of the problem is that part of having this debate, it shows you that that's a big issue. The fact that you don't know either way what's the Drissa Gay supposed to be doing, what's Armand Duanard supposed to be doing within
this
team.
That's number six for ages.
But that's when I felt when he went off the pitch, there was clear clarity on what individuals are meant to be doing in that midfield. Yeah. Just read this comment out here from the Blues, who's a regular commentator. Where's it gone? It says, put Onana in a possession team and he dominates. We aren't a possession team, so he'll never dominate for us. But that just proves my point then. Then we're not a possession team, so he's not really going to... His attributes and his skills aren't going to be highlighted in that season.
It's been a big fear for a long time, isn't it? No matter how much money they might end up getting for Amadou Onana, he goes on to, you know, a team with greater aspirations, great resources, and ends up becoming, you know, a real world-class midfielder. You think, oh, well, why didn't he do that for Evan?
Yeah. So what we're saying is, going back to the original point, isn't it? It's the style of the Dyche style of play. The limitations of colleagues all contributed towards Onana's
downfall.
But, you know, not being as effective as what it should be. But actually, one of the reasons also is why he's not effective as what he should be is actually within all that, he's not, but, you know, I wouldn't say not doing his best, but he's not applying himself as well as he should be doing as a footballer.
Which is why you said earlier on, I know you didn't watch it and I didn't, but I did see some of the highlights.
Yeah.
He was man of the match for Belgium.
Yeah.
And he's surrounded by quality players who he can, you know, do his usual stuff, win the ball back, you know, maybe advance a little bit, but just pass it sideways, like 5 or 6 yards.
Doesn't surprise me. See, when he come on to Manchester City, you know, you're getting beat in Manchester City, come on for the last half hour there, didn't he? And I don't even think he was fit. But I don't know whether because it was Manchester City or like City had taken the foot off the gas and just wanted to, you know, just to manage the game. He looked class then. You know, and that's the issue for him. But in the here and now, where we are in the Premier League at the moment, so can we afford to have that type of attitude?
No.
Look, I'm not slagging him off one little bit. No. I think he's a quality player, and unfortunately, he's probably going to leave this summer, and he's going to go on to, a team full of quality players, and his attributes and skills are going to shine through
all day long.
And that's what's going to happen. We'll move on from this point. I just felt that it was plain for everyone to see that, you know, it wasn't just because he went off, but he went off and our midfield looked so much more as an attacking threat, which, you know, yeah. Andre Gomes came on the pitch technically gifted, you know, really, really fantastic 15, 20 minutes that he had.
It was like a Spurs, wasn't it? I don't think anybody's played better as an outfielder for Everton this season than Andre Gomes' performance at Spurs, where I just thought he was superb, played beautifully at Spurs for an hour, and he played well last night. And to me, whether Burn is the game, I don't know, but you have to be saying it's all about balance. Would you give him a shirt and the player you would drop there would not be either Garner Gay or Anana or James Garner? Would you drop the Corey and play more like a 4-3-3, you know, 4-4-5-1, where you've got your two wide players as McNeil and Harrison, and then have, like, I'm just picking names out of a hat here, Garner, Anana and Gomes as three in the midfield. Maybe use that to play an arm a little bit more forward, and because Decore's offering nothing to me, he still doesn't look fit. He did very little again last night, like he has done since he came back. So I was expecting to see him a lot more fit and a lot more effective, that word again, since the break, but he hasn't. And I'm just wondering whether, you know, in terms of, we've not got many options to change things around. It is one of those options actually to get Gomes on the pitch in the centre midfield, but having two other midfielders with him. And maybe that's something to look at.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
In the past, I've advocated for Anana to be pushed further forward not necessarily a Fellaini role, but, you know, maybe a little bit similar to that.
Yeah, that Dyche has sort of poo-pooed that in the past when asked. That was maybe a year ago or so. He spoke about that, where he thinks that's any sort of different now. Like, as he seems more likely to do what Gav said, and, you know, and use Andre Gomes in that role. I mean, I can certainly see where you're coming from in terms of, you know, certainly, he should be better in the air. I mean, he scored a header against Burnley in the other game. We're in danger of making this into a Burnley preview, and we've probably got another pod on that.
It's
shot
last night, though, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. I don't know if he's inclined to do that with him, but he needs to be doing better. I think we're all agreed on that.
Yeah, not as like a 4-4-1-1 where he's playing behind Calvert-Lewin or Beto, based on last night, it was Calvert-Lewin, but like, as the more advanced midfielder, you know, to get in and around the box, you know, like our number eight, dare I say, is to do that a little bit more and give him a little bit more freedom around the pitch, which maybe he hasn't got at the moment. And I think there's a case for doing that, to be honest with you, because it's not working, is it? Really, the Corey and another striker is not working at the moment. So let's have a look and change it, perhaps.
Well, that's part of the problem, isn't it? Yeah. This winless run.
Okay, well, we can't not finish the podcast without talking about Dominic Calvert-Lewin, Chris.
Yeah.
He has broken his goal drought, which was in double figures.
Well, it says it's over 20 games, wasn't it? Was it 23 in the end?
Yeah, vital penalty.
Yeah.
We talked about it was a definite penalty, but he looked a bit nervous when he was stepping up. He was breathing quite heavily, I thought, and I just thought,
would anyone not be nervous in those?
No, I'm not. Listen. I was probably more nervous than Calvert-Lewin was. But yeah, regardless whether the keeper gets a hand to it, it's in the back of the net. Is this a turning point in his season?
It can be, and I certainly hope so. I think there's a few people around us in the press box who, certainly those of Everton affiliation, were struggling to look. I was looking, I was all right, but some of the others, there were even a few, again, like I said, not from the Echo. We were too busy timing it up, letting everyone know on the live blog, but there were a few cheers and a few people on their feet when that one went in. It was a massive moment, though. You know, like I said, I think he got it right in terms of his execution of the kick, going for power in those circumstances, and like I said, the keeper got a hand to it. It wasn't enough. Hopefully it can be a turning point, because it's not he's been feeding on scraps for a long time. He's one of those players, Gav's often said, hasn't he? You know, he struggles to create something out of
nothing.
He needs to have that service too, and if that's not coming, he is going to struggle. Yeah, he was the last Everton player, of course, to even convert a penalty back on 1st of May last year, at Leicester City. I mean, what a day that was. Obviously, that could have gone one way or the other. Obviously, Jordan Pickford saved one at the other end there. Could have been 3-1, so that was a huge turning point. Yeah, let's hope so, because, he's had the injuries the previous 2 years. I mean, he didn't even play 23 games either of the last two seasons, so he's kept himself fit. He's been desperately unlucky. It was a bit of a statistical anomaly, really, because he had the two goals against Tottenham, home and away, disallowed. But it's only natural as a number nine. It will play on your mind the longer you go without having a goal being credited to you. So let's hope so, because he can be patchy. He can't be sort of streaky and have those purple patches. So let's hope this is a start bit of a run of goals for him, because they really do need it.
I mean, he's been a fantastic penalty taker for us, Gav. I mean, it wasn't the best penalty, but like I say, it went in, so hopefully that's got to breed confidence for him now.
You would hope so. I thought the goalie was saying on his end, he had the clunk on the gloves, didn't you? You'd expect to see the ball reappear back into the penalty.
It was a big hand, wasn't it?
Yeah. I did. Like, I was laughing this morning and you're reading and listening to stuff and whatever, and people saying, oh, he's had a lot of bottle to take that penalty. And I was thinking, Roy Keane would just turn and say, it's his job. which ultimately it is. I mean,
it was a good opportunity for him, wasn't it?
Absolutely. The counter to that, it's never that. We're thinking, I'm going to have this.
Yeah.
It's a great opportunity. The only thing I'd say is, and you know what our work is, if you had another couple of goals without a goal, it'd be like Calvert-Lewin's gone 25 games without scoring an open play, that'll be the next Chris is good points. See his career, and this is one of the things I criticise Calvert-Lewin for, is a streaky player. He had the goods run in the autumn, and he was that 5-5 or something like that when he came back in, and his career is one of scoring 5 or 6 goals in 5 or 6 games and then not scoring for 10-15 games. So hopefully what you're saying is right, and this
hat-trick against Burnley, didn't we? We're previewing Burnley again.
And this may be the start, hopefully, of a decent run for him. Because that's what all the stats show, that's what will happen. He ends a long streak without scoring, and then has a streak with scoring. So hopefully that'll be a good omen for the next few games.
Yeah, absolutely. Fingers crossed. Obviously Burnley next, but we will preview that.
I thought we'd done that already. Yeah,
on Friday. Just dead quick, sorry, Pickford, very good last night, wasn't he? Kept us in.
That's really good, isn't it? That we got through all that with even mentioned. Yeah, I think it showed great maturity from Jordan Pickford, because, I'm sure you picked it up on the telly. Absolute pantomime stuff. Here we go, we'll have another hour on this now. from the Newcastle fans. I mean, even the stadium announced before they did the kickoff, they did the Everton team, and it was Jordan Pickford. He deliberately left a big pause before he went on to the next player, just to get all those big boos in early. Two grown men dressed as dinosaurs behind the goal.
I think that's good. That's fun. I like that.
But what he did, in the past, He's let that get to him.
The 3-2 game.
Infamous game when Everton threw it away. I was on St. James's Park that day as well. Yeah, so he come full circle from that. Held his nerve. Saves were great. We know he's a great world-class shot stopper, but obviously there's questions about his footwork. They were doing their best every time he kicked it. They were making out he'd shanked it or something. They were like, whatever. He wasn't. His footwork was spot on, and had the last laugh on him. So much so that he's even able to do one of his catches where he goes to the ground at the end of stoppage time and have a smile.
I think when he came off the pitch as well. Somebody said there's a couple of things. And we are going on another pod here. Was he man of the match? Was he the official?
Yeah.
Where they announced that in the stadium as a moot point. And I know it's just a few things that were received from Newcastle fans this morning. It's like, can we stop this dinosaur stuff? It's just
although you said you're motivating for it.
I'm all for it. I think it's a good laugh. And the one thing we miss in football, I don't think it's a good laugh. Yeah. I think it's funny, you know what I mean? But I'm a different age, aren't I? I just think I'd laugh about that. We take ourselves too seriously and we're too sensitive to these type of things, aren't we? And it's a good laugh. Not wrong
with
that.
Was it Gav in the T-Rex suit, was it?
So we need a big T-Rex suit these days. I think we can get a little bit obsessed by that. But fair play, I thought it was excellent. Those couple of saves made in the first half kept us in the game, didn't
they?
effectively, because it could have been two or three down if it wasn't for his... And also as well, by the way, we've forgotten about Mikhailenko's goal line clearance.
Yeah, the header,
Yeah. All these in the moments missed?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think that's a good place to leave it. That's all for today's show. Please remember to like, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Follow us on Facebook as well, Everton FC, Liverpool Echo. And also remember to give Chris's interview with Derek Mountfield a watch.
Yes, we've got another one coming up. I won't say who it is yet, but yeah, we've got another one in the pipeline now.
So yeah. It's been really well received, hasn't it, Chris, today, the Derek Mountfield
excellent both
interview.
Thank you.
He was well worth the hour, wasn't he? And like I said, Chris is, you know, it's a series of Goodison Park, My Home, so there's plenty more to come. For that, so we're going to be back Friday. I'm not too sure what time we're going to be back, but Chris is probably going to be you, Joe, and maybe someone else for Friday.
Yeah.
Friday morning, Friday afternoon to preview the Burnley show. I've been Ian Crowe, been joined by Chris Beasley and Gav Buckland, and this has been the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.